When your furnace or air conditioner quits, you need it fixed, fast. This is Dennis Sullivan, president of CARE Heating and Cooling. Our technicians are paid to fix your HVAC system, not sell you a new one. We show up on time, diagnose the problem, and get you comfortable again, without the high-pressure sales pitch. It's our commitment to honesty and craftsmanship that helped us win the Lennox Partner of the Year Award and a BBB Torch Award for Ethics last year. So, call CARE Heating and Cooling at 1-800-COOLING or book an appointment online at careheatingandcooling.com. When you need a company you can trust.
Unless you do want that. Unless in which case you can get that. It at patreon.com/yourmomspodcast.
You sure the fuck can. All right, this is going to be an aggressive episode, I feel like.
Apparently. Let's do this.
Hello and welcome to the 13th episode of Season 5 of Your Mom's Podcast, the only podcast that's worth walking out on a date with one of Degrassi's coolest girls. I'm Avis.
And I'm fucking Caroline. Sorry, we said we were going to be aggressive. I'm Caroline.
I did not.
I'm Avis.
And today... This is what happens when we record at 7:30 at night. It's going to be unhinged. It's fine.
It's always unhinged.
It is always unhinged.
No matter what time of day it is.
They're like, hey, bitch, we listen to your show. Oh, no, what if the
presents make it not unhinged anymore?
I will smite them, although I won't actually smite them because they are doing a thing that they need to be doing.
Yeah, I've made it through the executive dysfunction this many years. If it makes me not be funny anymore, you let me know. We'll flush those pills.
I'm done. You're like, I cannot not be funny. That's the book. Like, that is literally
funny,
like,
and fashionable. That's all I've got, babe.
I'm so done. You're like, you can't take it away from me. I'm crying for my cold, dead hands. Okay. And today we are discussing Degrassi Season 5, Episode 17, Total Eclipse of the Heart. Roses are red. Liberty is a disaster. Marco Del Rossi is also a disaster. Sorry. I still don't read these, which
I know,
really,
I love it.
I never will. I never will. I
That'll
promise
be
you
when
that.
We have a big fight, is when you start reading
like,
the
script. I'm going to start reading these fucking scripts the day they're available. Bored. That was weird.
Bored.
And I'm in a house. In the house. Bored. Wait, no. Bored in the house. And I'm in the house. Bored. Bored in the house. And I'm in the house. Bored. Bored in the house. Bored in the house. Bored. Bored. No. Vine.
I have no idea what that was.
That was a vine. Okay. That was a vine. Okay.
That explains why it almost made me drop my croissant.
Oh my gosh. Bored with nothing to do. So he starts university.
It's not that funny.
Marco, but that's fucking true. It's funny because it's true. Marco is letting Tim follow him around like a sad puppy. That is until Dylan shows up. Then Marco is calling Tim his boyfriend and kissing him, and Tim is too love struck to see he's being used. Over in the B-plot, we finally get a teeny tiny glimpse into how Liberty feels about her pregnancy.
Finally.
Finally. It's not like she was pregnant for like 6 months of which we knew about. 9 months, six of which we knew about. Give or take.
My biggest thing from this B-plot is why the fuck... Why do none of these parents ever think that they should get their kids counseling? Jimmy gets shot and paralyzed. You can see a sports psychologist.
Craig's
dad fucking dies after a fight. No therapy.
Craig, I keep this garage heated in hydro. Yeah.
Manny's abortion, no therapy. Emma gets held at gunpoint. Gets gonorrhea in her throat. No therapy.
They're relying on Miss Sove.
She is one person. She is...
Yeah.
She's the true Reba McEntire of this fucking show.
No, actually, she's just emotionally, like, supporting a vast majority of the main cast, which might as well be the entire student body. Let's be real. But yeah, the teeny tiny part is what I want to hit on to, because it is more about Derek being... I mean, not even more about Derek is just like, I feel like they spend enough time on making Derek someone who is bridging that emotional conversation or the gap with Liberty. And that is why we're getting.
Yeah. But I mean, it had to be someone because like, I just don't like, it wouldn't be realistic after the way that Liberty has reacted to this pregnancy, although I don't know, maybe like baby's gone, she comes out of the fog, like whatever, but it, I think there needed to be a bridge, and I'm okay with it being Derek is a piece of shit like 99.99999% of his time at Degrassi. Let him have this moment.
I mean, I don't want to, though. I don't like him. I mean, do I like him in this episode? Sure. I'm not made of stone. I think that it's kind of like clear that you're supposed to be very sympathetic to. And I think that the notion that he brings of giving like a treasure chest to their child gives Liberty a lot of hope and a lot of closure that she didn't get. And so, of course, I appreciate the role that Derek plays. At the same time, get him the fuck off my screen. I don't like him.
That's fair. That's super.
And it's like he's used almost as much of like a plot device as like, you know, when they bring Hazel out to be homophobic. Like, it's a plot device. It's not really Derek. When do we talk about him being adopted again? We just know that he's adopted. And it's sweet, and it's like what Liberty needs. That baby bounce back, that post-baby bounce back is real. Because why does she look so like... They even stopped doing her hair the same. Now her hair is like up and like curly a little bit. Uh-huh. Which I'm digging. I actually really like the look on her.
She looked good this episode.
She looked good this episode because I think they do this similar thing to when she goes to university. They start doing her hair like that again. But like her hair is in stark contrast to how she's looked for most of this season.
Yeah, well, it's because like she's getting back to herself after being in this weird kind of fugue state.
Yeah.
Is it weird to you that Liberty opted for open adoption? Because it's weird to me.
Yeah, well, I think so because of what we know about why she chose adoption in the first place. I don't think that makes a lot of sense for...
Right. Well, and like just the way that she was about the whole pregnancy. Like, yeah, it's it's weird.
Right, because she is not presumably this would have all happened off screen. But the conversation that she has with her parents about like, oh, we have an open adoption and all of that, like it just seems like she would have visited him or whatever if she didn't had even the know opportunity. His name. Right.
Because like you see in the treasure chest she puts together, there's like a mix CD that's like Liberty's mix for baby.
Mm-hmm.
Like she does not even know what his parents named him.
So how is it? Yeah, the open adoption part. Is it like?
No, I mean, open adoption doesn't like.
Because don't they? I feel like they use a different term when it's like it's not like, okay, we share details of the like.
Well, okay, so
partially.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Open adoption, maybe?
Here's the thing. I mean, I don't know a lot about it. I do know from people who have had children that they ended up placing for adoption that were open adoptions. Mm-hmm. It doesn't actually mean anything.
Oh, okay.
It's not like there's not any kind of binding agreement. You have no rights. Mm-hmm. Like, I had a friend who, you know, she had a child and then she had another child and she placed that child for adoption and then she had a third child. And like those kids, like the child that she placed for adoption used to come and visit like with mm-hmm. their dad every year or whatever. And then just one day they stopped and she hasn't heard anything from them. They don't respond to her. Like, mm-hmm. all she's seen of that kid in the last several years is, like, the adoptive parent's YouTube channel.
Really?
And there's no recourse.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
I think all it means is that, like, the records aren't, like, sealed.
Sealed. Okay.
And I don't know that adoption records are, I don't know. I'm not that educated on it. But, like, open adoption only means something until the adoptive parents decide that it doesn't anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And they can move, they can change the child's name, they can, you know, not send you updates, not send you pictures, even if that was the, like, what you had agreed to.
Right. And I mean, that's, that fucking sucks. And I think, she's a kid, but hopefully she did more research than me and knows that that's kind of the case, but it doesn't seem like she knows.
Well, no, she did, though, because her mom's like, you know, of course they can move with him. Like, he's their baby. That's their right or whatever. And she's like, oh, and what are my rights? That's right. None. I gave them up.
Right. She understands that she doesn't have the right to, like, for him, like, to want him to stay anywhere and all of that, but I don't, like, the fact that she doesn't even have the right to know his name, and so it's...
I don't know that... I don't think that they've withheld that information. I don't think Liberty has wanted to know. Liberty was so distant from that pregnancy and so distant from, like, she saw him when he was born, and then they took him away, and I think while the adoptive parents... it at least seems have been open, Liberty hasn't wanted that. Mm-hmm. You know, and whether or not that's how she really feels or that's just how she's coping with the trauma
mm-hmm.
is another thing entirely. It would seem that that's just how she's coping with the trauma, considering as soon as she found out that that door was closing, she had, like, the weirdest mental breakdown in Degrassi history.
Right. Just fucking threw that packet of that test packet
Einstein
at Mr. Ellis, like, here, bitch, here's your fucking blank ass test. I drew a flower on the front.
Fuck Mr. Ellis, because, like, any other teacher
would have gotten up and
been like, Liberty, what's going on?
Are you good, bro? Like, you literally just, are you good? As the kids would say, you crashed out on this exam, you know. Well, not on this exam. You crashed out in general. But I feel bad for... I feel bad for her because it's like she's not allowed to have these feelings until just now. She's not allowed to, like, to be... It's like her parents are so... I have a problem with her parents and their... demeanor in this scene. It feels so, like, smarmy and gleeful almost that this is occurring. Like, her dad's like, there's their baby. You have a right to move.
Like, right, because, like, then the embarrassment moves further away.
Right. Like, he's just so, excited. There's an excitement. There's a jubilant, like, the way that he did the line delivery is, like, bouncy. I don't like it.
Well,
I've
and
never
then, like, Liberty
gets,
like, we find out in the end
just
that, like, Liberty gets grounded.
Oblivious.
He drinks, like, an eighth of a bottle of whiskey and accidentally breaks a mirror. And, like, your kid is going through so much shit. Clearly, she is struggling. The answer is not to fucking ground her.
Right.
Ask the mayor. Maybe he'll tell you.
And it's not like it's you have literally probably showed no compassion for her going through this. It's a traumatic thing to give up a child. You should get her help. Therapy. You should probably talk to her and not just like you see that she is numb and that she's not really connecting to what's going on.
Right.
Like you should, it shouldn't be something that you're taking such a personal investment in that you're neglecting your fucking child. Like Liberty is so clearly struggling with her choice and struggling with the fact that she is going to literally have no proximity to her child. Like, and she won't even know roughly where he is because they could decide to move again and she won't know.
And they don't have to tell her. They might tell her.
Right.
But they don't have to. They didn't have to tell her that they were moving to Seattle, you know, and my hope would be that they told her they were moving to Seattle and gave her the chance to come and say goodbye. Not, you know, not that they didn't give a fuck about Liberty, but like it not as a kindness to Liberty, but as a kindness to that child.
Right.
You know what I mean? And like, hopefully they're not going to be the kind of parents who are going to like sever that or hamper that kid knowing where he came from. You know what I mean?
And I mean, you would hope so, but I feel like, especially when the child is adopted at birth, there might even be like a desire to just have a clean slate and like not, you know, divulge all of that until the appropriate ages and all of that shit. And I feel like as an adoptive parent, there has to be some kind of consideration for what is ultimately going to be the best for the child because you don't know what it's like, not most likely. I'm not going to say there aren't.
Just like not telling your kid they're adopted is wild to me.
There are so many instances of that happening, and I don't know how you do that. And it's not to be like, oh, you know, I'm on my high horse. That's not really what I mean. It's just I think that you are kind of brewing up an identity crisis.
Well, I think it's important to note, too, that like, even like a good adoption with good, supportive, trauma-informed adoptive parents, like adoption, especially like at birth, mm-hmm. is a trauma.
It's a trauma.
Like, it is. Yeah. Because a baby knows their mother. They know mm-hmm. the sound of her voice and her heartbeat and her smell and all of that. And it fucks with them to be taken away from her.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And like, most of the shit that really shapes who we are, like, and how our brains are wired happens in like
the first 5 years.
5 fucking years.
Yeah.
And like, it's not, when I say adoption is trauma, like, I'm not saying adoption is across the board a bad thing.
No.
But it is always a trauma. Like,
it is always a trauma.
Like, medical.
Mm-hmm. It's a fact. Even in like, at birth, but you know, you can take it to even when a child is removed from their home, even if it is the, you know, neglectful, that child is being removed
from
the only home they've ever known, the only parents they've ever known, and being put into a completely different environment with people they don't know. That's completely traumatic. So it's like, I don't know how you're not transparent about, like, you've got to be transparent about that.
Right.
Like, acknowledge that because, like, I feel like you innately, there's something that not knowing that could really creates some turmoil inside someone and they don't even know why.
Well, and like the fact of the matter, especially in this day and age with like DNA tests and shit, like you used to be able to get away with it, I'm sure. But like, I feel like at this point, the chances that your child doesn't at some point find out are slim to fucking none. Yeah. And like, can you imagine if you like found out tomorrow that Bev wasn't your birth mom, that you were adopted and that she had kept that from you for your whole life?
Bro, do you know that was like my worst fear for like a solid two to three months when I was a kid, to the point where like I shook my mom down for hospital photos. Like I was like, literally, honey, I'm not buying it. No. And she's like, first of all, you look exactly like your father. Stamp. He spits you out. You look like me too. Here are the photographs you requested. And also, I have photos of my, like, vagina afterwards. Like,
you know your mom's serious when she's like, do you want to see what you did to me?
What happened, the result? Like, my mom is just like, I'm your mother. Like, I'm your birth mother. Like, I squeezed you out. You tore me up. I went into labor at 9:22 or early in the morning, and then I had you at 9:22 at night or 33 at night. Like, I know you came out of my body. Please leave me alone so I can watch my show. Like,
but how much should I weigh?
Right. I'm like, I need the photo.
What time? Mm-hmm. Was mom? Mm-hmm.
What hospital? What, like, I.
And the doctor's name was what?
I was so upset. Like, I was so upset. And she. Because I had the same doctor at the time. So she took me. He delivered me and everything. So she took me and she was like, Dr. Rogers, can you please tell her?
Are you sure she didn't bribe him?
I mean, I'm sure that little me was still not satisfied with this info. Because
I'm just saying,
so many people about this at like Thanksgiving. I'm like going around like, did you see my mother pregnant? And I was the result.
Okay, well, so I'm just saying, though, like, I've kind of fallen out of my Desperate Housewives rewatch, but I was rewatching Desperate Housewives, and I was in season 5. Uh-huh. And in season 5, Dana Delaney moves to the lane, and she's got a secret. Because whoever moves to the lane with a fucking secret. Mm-hmm. Anyway, her secret is that she had this daughter, Dylan, and then she also had this abusive husband. Mm-hmm. But he's kind of out of it. He had come back. He had found them because they had moved. And she's like packing up to go. And then the night that they're like going to flee from him, her daughter climbs a dresser to get this doll. And the dresser falls on her and kills her. Mm. And then Dana Delaney ends up finding a little girl who looks just like her now dead daughter in Romania.
Oh,
and adopts her and is just like, you're Dylan. And this Romanian kid is like so traumatized. She already, like, she doesn't have childhood memories really. So she's just like, you know, or as she grows, like, she's happy to repress them and just be like, yeah, I'm this Dylan kid. So, I mean, I'm just saying it could still be true.
I could be from. Well. Mother, answer for your crimes. No, I really feel like it's a lot to mentally grapple with being on the other side of that. And I hope that I keep wanting to call this baby Doug. This baby is not Doug.
This baby doesn't have a name.
This baby does not have a name. It's like, of course, we get her drinking whiskey. We get her fucking crashing out, breaking a mirror. Just having a general, you know, emotion about it. Just a whole big emotion. I feel like this is really all the last we hear of it until
college.
Is there some other...
No, because it's going to come up because it's part of their, like, resentment of her with the JT Mia relationship.
Oh, right, right, right. I remember
We're not done with this yet.
Because of course they've got to fuck with Liberty further by bringing in a teen mom who has a child and then successfully dates her ex and then wants to bring a daycare and all sorts of things that maybe, possibly, we don't know. It's her decision. Might have changed her decision had that been available to her. Had she had an ex that did not sell drugs and had
and take drugs.
Well, supply drugs to be sold.
Steal drugs, sell drugs, wholesale drugs.
Yeah.
Overdose on drugs. Mm-hmm. JT.
Yeah, so I forgot about that. And actually, that's a really good tie-in. But Mia, the whole character of Mia is just a troll. And I am not ready for her to come on screen.
We don't have to go there yet.
Thank God.
We have to go there soon because season six is like right around the corner. But
it is. I feel like my biggest thing with the B-plot is... it's the treasure chest. I think that's probably the biggest takeaway for me is like feeling like at least Liberty can do something to feel like she has had an outlet, like a genuine outlet in this situation, because I really feel like she has been doing things because she put the baby up for adoption because of JT and feeling like she wasn't going to be supported by him. And she has really doubled down on that because of her parents. Like, she is trying to do the things that she knows that she feels like she should do, not really what she wants to do.
Well, and it's hard, right? Because that's such a personal, like, life-changing choice that was essentially made for her.
Yeah.
Between JT's actions and I feel like her parents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and like, I honestly, I feel like if Liberty's parents had known before she was like past the point where she could terminate, I would not put it past those motherfuckers to have forced her to have an abortion.
Absolutely. They're kind of the only, other than Kate and Jeff, they're like the only, and I mean, we don't see Spike and Snake like parent together that much. These are like the only parents that we really see parenting and actively trying to like control their child,
right? And it's like, and that's it's also fucked. I hate Liberty's parents.
I do too. Like,
not to bring it back to Pretty Little Liars, but in the pilot, when Pam Fields says that thing about, like, I can't believe Arya's parents let her run around with that pink hair. And Emily's like, that's because they don't see their children as property.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the Van Sants are very much those parents who see you as their property. And they see you as a reflection of them. And, like, not that, like, yes, every kid is to a degree a reflection of their parents.
But I mean, to support that theory, she literally says when she's commandeering that bottle of whiskey that her parent adheres to dressing me in overalls until grade 9. Like, they supplied her clothing. She had no choice with what she wore. They only just started letting her buy other things besides overalls. And that is just them trying to control her and also keep her as young as, you know, as innocent, young seeming as they can. And I mean, obviously, I feel like this is a tale as old as time. When you have parents that are restrictive in some way, you're going to have a big backlash. It's going to be, you're not going to be able to really know what it is going to be, but like, it depends on how the child is being controlled. Liberty is heavily surveilled about how she presents herself, the things that she does, what she wears.
Well, and like, I would bet money that like Liberty right now today is at least low contact with her parents, if not no contact.
I would think so for her fucking peace of mind. Like,
unless they've done a lot of growing and a lot of apologizing.
They don't seem like the type. I think they'd have to get divorced first, because I think that they are, like, terrible too. They are really bad, like, duo. Like, she just supports whatever he is, you know, all his bullshit, and vice versa. Like, they don't hold each other account. There's no critical thought. Like, they are obviously a plot device, but we have seen them in a couple episodes now being a unit and standing firm in the bullshit against this situation. So it's like, I can only assume that this is how they parent in general. They are a unit. They're on the same page. They are spewing the same bullshit, and they think the same. So if I doubt you're going to make any headway if they're not separated.
Yeah.
Like, no, they need to do the work. They need to do the work because first of all, Danny is just an asshole.
Right. You can, like, tell that even though, like, Danny is also held to a high standard, mm-hmm. Danny is not held to nearly the same standard that Liberty is.
Right. It's nowhere near. It really is, like, just a double standard of, like, she's a girl, so we've got to keep the reins tight on her.
Well, to be fair, she doesn't have sick dance moves either, the way that Danny does.
Oh my gosh. Oh, Danny. He's the worst in this episode. And I think he's, obviously, they're playing up the little brother thing, but it's like, he's he really just sucks. Like, he's picking up on nothing. He's picking up on, like, none of Liberty's emotions.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he knows what she's been through.
He was literally included in more of the fucking plots than she was. So, like, right. He was throwing down over this pregnancy, ready to beat JT's ass. So now you're just gonna, like, make fun of her and bully her and whatever.
Right. Here's what a good little brother would do. He would take the fall for the mirror and then be like, also completely unrelated, but Lib's going through it, and, like, I don't know, maybe, like, some therapy or something is in order. Maybe you guys should, like, cut her some slack and, like, ask her how she's doing.
Right.
That doesn't have anything to do with the mirror. It's just another, I thought of it randomly. I broke the mirror, completely unrelated.
But that would mean that they were trying to make Danny, like, a character and not just a caricature of a little brother. Because, like, right. Even at times, Toby and Ashley are the other, like, siblings we've seen. So they are at each other's throats. But there's not any loss of, like, okay, I know when we play too much, you know? Like, I know when we have hit the point where it's like, okay, I'm playing too much. You're actually going through some shit.
Whereas Danny's just like, you're spiraling really hard. Let me poke the bear.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, you're ugly.
Ugly ass bitch. Yeah.
Right.
Because that's what this situation means.
At the end of Jagged Little Pill,
mm-hmm.
It's like, oh fuck, Ashley's having a meltdown, like, we'll clean up in a minute,
right?
Let me go be there for my not even really my sister,
not even really my fucking sister,
although she's all I have now because our parents disappeared
into the void. Yeah. I feel bad for Liberty. I continue to feel bad for Liberty and the people that she is surrounded with. The fact that Derek is the shining element of her story this week really pisses me off.
Yeah, at least it's a Liberty POV, though. Or not POV, really, but you know what I mean, a Liberty focus.
A Liberty focused, yeah.
At least it's not, how does Derek feel about Liberty's pregnancy?
How does Derek feel about Liberty's pregnancy and Derek's journey to get Liberty to accept the no-name baby moving away.
To help Liberty finally figure her shit out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a shame. Like, Derek could have been an interesting character. Like, it's been a while since I watched this. So at first I was like, wait, does he have a thing for Liberty? And I was like, no, duh. Like, he's never talked to an adult or anybody who's, like, placed a child for adoption.
Mm-hmm.
He's got trauma. He's got questions. He wants to know things.
He's got trauma. He's got questions.
We all have trauma. I mean, isn't the real trauma the friends we made along the way? Like,
I have so many questions and I have so much trauma. Yeah. I fuck if I know, man. This B plot took nothing out of me because I just.
I actually really like this B plot. I think it should have been the A plot.
It felt like it was to be.
I am so sick of Liberty's pregnancy getting relegated scraps to the lens of other people. Mm-hmm. And then, like, we finally get it through the lens of Liberty and it's a B plot.
Right. Like, the last time
and we got. And it barely scratches the surface.
A Liberty, like, of an episode about Liberty's pregnancy, because it's not a Liberty centric episode, was Fulon, I think, when it was the two parter.
Fulon's not a two parter.
Isn't no? Well, then what's the
turned
two?
Turned out,
yeah. Because like it's not even about Liberty's pregnancy. It's about drugs and
JT's spiral. It's
I feel it's very cheap.
Hashtag justice for Liberty.
You literally had an entire fucking pregnancy and you relegated it to a B plot. The whole season. I'm not okay. I never will be.
It's a tragedy. And I guess, like, let's suffer through this fucking
A-plot that they decided to make an A-plot other than...
Watch us not even, like, hit the same amount of time
talking about it. But honestly, I'm fine with that because here's my highlights about the A-plot. Marco's a piece of shit for... stringing him along, although I understand being in the frame of mind where you're trying to move on, but you cannot help who you're attracted to.
I believe that he's not like doing it he's not doing it consciously. He doesn't realize that it's what he's doing. Like, he's just being reckless and impulsive. Because when Tim's like, being impulsive to me, he's like, I wouldn't do that.
Yes, he's not into so. What did you say?
The malice isn't there.
What did you say before? Intent doesn't.
Intention is an impact, right?
Right. So he didn't intend to, like, string Tim along, but that's exactly what he does.
He did string Tim along, and he did use Tim.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't trying to. He didn't know he was doing it, but he only didn't know he was doing it because he didn't stop to think about what he was doing.
He just didn't think about any of the things he's doing. And that is like, it's funny how he calls Dylan out while they're playing poker or whatever the fuck they're playing, Texas Hold'em. I don't know. He is like, oh yeah, that's, you know, that's what's like being reckless, not thinking, just doing. Like, that is exact. Like, it's funny that you are calling like that. Tim really does wrap it up very nicely. They deserve each other. Now made yourself what you hated about Dylan, because you walked in on Dylan kissing another guy without a conversation to you. But now what you're doing is taking away someone's choice who you know is a simp for you. You know that you guys have been in this weird little, like, limbo, define the relationship, whatever. He is at your beck and call. You are now the more experienced gay in the equation. He reminds me so much of young Marco, of season 3 Marco.
Mm-hmm.
Of like the I overorganized the chips because they're all messy. Like, he is very innocent and earnest in a way that Marco is no longer, because he has been hurt so many times, not just by Dylan, but by the world.
And so he's like repeating that cycle, right? Because it's the same thing. Like, we're what? You're a freshman, maybe a sophomore. I'm about to go to college.
Yep.
Like, you're a little baby gay.
I'm your first, anything. He was probably, Marco was probably his first kiss.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the fact that he, and I think that was probably, like, the flippant nature to which Dylan kissed Marco is like, okay, you got to get this out of the way. Like, you got to just be kissed, you know? Like, he wasn't thinking about, oh, this is probably his first kiss.
Mm-hmm. No.
Like, a lot of their romance is, like, it's it rhymes, you know, like Tim and Marco, they rhyme with what happened with Marco and Dylan. And yeah, I feel so bad for Tim.
I don't like it.
Right. It's a similar sliminess of like, I'm experienced. I know the way things work. You're just not there yet. You're not on my level yet. You haven't been through any type of experience. So how can I really describe to you what it's like to have someone cheat on you and all of this stuff that Marco feels like he's just out of his emotional depth, Tim. Like Tim can't relate. Tim doesn't understand because he's so young.
So why are you stringing him along? Fuck you.
And like they mentioned that like Alex and Ellie and Paige are basically like, why the fuck are you hanging out with him?
Right, like you clearly aren't that into him.
Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, there he is. Like you don't really want him around. Like you're just and you like, want someone around.
Here's a clear indication that Tim is too young. Is that like Marco's being so blatant at every turn of what he's doing, and Tim's just like, he likes me. He really likes me.
No, actually.
No, the whole thing is
it's
like
so pointed.
The four leaf clover in the Tiffany's box made me throw up.
Do you know how long that shit took for him to find?
No, because here's the thing. There are two kinds of people on this planet. There are people who, like, find one or two four-leaf clovers in their whole lives. Exactly one, and I was, like, 31 years old.
I think I found one, and I was, like, three. So, opposite.
And then there are motherfuckers who will find them every time they look down at a patch of grass. They don't even have to be looking at all. They can just absentmindedly look down at the ground, and then, boom, four-leaf fucking clover.
I'm about to make these kids go on a four-leaf clover hunt because that shit takes patience.
And I'll tell you what, those motherfuckers are the
they're gonna be pissed
people on the planet.
Well,
I have never met one like the kind of person like the people that I know that are just lucky or four-leaf clover magnets are all like they'll tell you they have the shittiest luck.
That's crazy. So I don't want that. So you're like, Tim, well, I think that would track because Tim has terrible luck in this instance.
Well, here's the thing. It's like, if you find a four-leaf clover, I find a four-leaf clover, it is good luck because we never find them.
Because we never find them. But people
but
who
if
have
you're
chronic...
finding all the time, motherfucker, thoughts and prayers, man.
I'm so tired. Oh my God.
I also want to call out like Dylan.
Fuck
on the
Dylan.
Dance floor. Yeah, fuck Dylan. But Dylan on the dance floor was giving... Okay, so in my notes, I said that it was giving divorced dad. But you know what it reminded me of? Because he kind of looks like he's, like, making faces at somebody before he notices Marco. It's just, like, a second and a half.
Mm-hmm.
But it reminded me of the episode of Superstore where they go to the, like, convention thing.
Mm-hmm.
And Jeff is there.
Yeah.
And there's that point where Jeff's just, like, standing and, like, waving at nobody.
Yeah.
And it was very much giving that.
I'm glad you brought up Dylan. Dylan is giving such weird energy throughout this entire episode.
Yeah,
it's
very...
It's so scattered.
You know what I think is I bet that Dylan went to... It sounds like Dylan... I'm pretty sure Dylan transferred colleges this year because Paige specifically says he's at McGill, which is in Toronto, or not in Toronto, in Quebec.
In Quebec and, okay.
And like, I mean, I guess I don't know how far Quebec is from Toronto, but like we're led to believe in season four that Dylan's college is pretty close by.
Yes, right. Yes, just a little minivan drive away. It's not super far.
It's like an 8-hour drive from Orwell to Montreal. Let's see.
Jesus.
But still. It's 5.5 hours. So he transferred colleges, I believe.
Yeah. To be with more. Like,
Well, no, from he transferred... The college he's been going
away,
to
farther.
Five. He transferred further away. But anyway, sorry, that's a small point. what I think probably happened is that Dylan probably had somebody do to him what he had done to Marco, where like he started dating an upperclassman. He fell hard. Upperclassman was like,
that's cute. Let's keep it casual. Yeah.
And what's Dylan supposed to do? Because Chapel Roan is still like 20 years away from existing. So he can't listen to casual and like angry sing along.
I'm done.
So he's just got to go back home to Toronto and terrorize fucking Marco.
It is certainly giving, I got a taste of my own medicine. And now I'm coming back like with my tail tucked between my legs, ready to eat crow. But literally,
the power dynamic has changed.
It like has. He's like, and he's take being me back, Marco.
So pathetic.
He's being like, super pathetic. He is like to the point where he's like has to fucking goad him into playing, and like that's how you first. Oh my god.
Where it, to the point where it looks like he got a tattoo this morning, so he would have an
so excuse he could so he could his take shirt his off this shirt afternoon off.
To right. show his friend the. Lamest tattoo,
but like he is giving like it is so pathetic to be like I am going to use everything in my toolbox, and that includes my super hot hockey body, okay,
right,
getting all these abs. And clearly Marco, okay, so he's the only guy that Marco's ever been intimate with,
right?
Like, Marco doesn't, I know they want us to, I know they want us to be, like, on board with their relationship because of this episode. And do I like, if this episode existed in a vacuum, I would totally be down for them.
If they had started dating now, it would bother me less.
It would bother me less, and it had it been like, you know, Marco fought hard, wanted him, and Dylan was just like, sidelined him. It was like, you are too young. No. Blah, blah,
right,
blah.
And then I'm going Dylan's to school. For the summer,
I might want to be like, a hoe.
Oh, you know
right.
what, Marco.
Right. Because at this You've point matured. Now.
Marco has, like.
Marco is matured.
Marco doesn't look like a baby standing next to Dylan the way that he did when Dylan was his boyfriend.
Oh, totally. They look like they go together now. They actually look like they could be it. And like, I'm glad that they were like, Adamo, get those fucking cornrows out of your head.
Get
and
those cornrows
and
out of your head.
And he's rocking man bun because it looks like they look like counterparts, especially the way at the end of the episode when they're at this. I'm going to talk about this come fashion corner because it's an eyesore. But when he like pulls Dylan's head toward him and like, I don't like, they look good together. They look mm-hmm. like they are like aged similarly now. Get a still from when they first started dating, and it looks like Dylan's kidnapping him.
Right.
He looks like he needs an adult.
I don't care. I hated them then. I hate them now.
Honestly, I
hated them less then.
The story wants us to love, like, love that Dylan came crawling back. And
right, because it was the early 2000s, and every writer's room was like, here's your representation, crumbs.
Here, damn.
Thank you.
Damn, bitch. Always was some shit. I don't care that this is supposed to be representation. It's toxic as fuck. It would be toxic at any age.
Mm-hmm. No, they're not good together. They're just fucking not.
And the way that he's like, you can play it safe. You can date Tim. Date Tim. Date a bunch of guys. Doesn't change the fact that it all comes down to you and me every time. You thought you ate with that, didn't you, bitch?
How awkward to be Tim.
You dusty ass bitch. Right? Like, Tim is just sitting here like, I'm still here, guys.
Right, like, hi, still I'm here. I don't know if we met.
I just organized the chips over here.
Boyfriend.
Apparently. And I was promised a Ryan Reynolds film fiesta, whatever the fuck that means. And I am just really kind of confused right now because you guys look like you're having a little kind of an intense moment.
Well, a fiesta is a party.
Caroline, what films compel, what Ryan Reynolds films are you watching in like a marathon format?
Right. Well, and none of them evoke the word fiesta.
Fiesta?
Marathon party, I mean, sure.
You could be.
I guess there's like enough Deadpool movies to marathon now, but there weren't not any right. Deadpool movies then. Like, Ryan Reynolds even do it? Like,
I was about to look this up because I'm like, I don't even know what this man was in to warrant this at that point in time. This was 2005.
No, he was pretty big then.
I don't. Was he? I'm about to find out. Just Friends. Okay. I remember that one. He was in Blade Trinity. Was he? Was he?
Do you mean Blades of Glory?
No, Blade Trinity. And he does look to be back there with terrible hair and a really bad goatee.
Weird. Okay.
Yeah, he was in that. Okay, that was 2004. I doubt that was in the rotation. The Amityville Horror in 2005. Okay. Let me find some O2s. Waiting?
Yeah.
Dick? Okay, I could see that. That's Dick, a good one.
Like the movie, the...
That Michelle and Kirsten,
I fucking love that movie.
Yeah, that's.
I remember my mom rented and I rented that one weekend, and we watched it like three times.
It's that one I can see.
Love Dick.
So you've got like two, School of Life.
He was in Dick. I don't remember him being in that.
That's what they said. Smoke and Aces. I doubt there was. No, that's 2006. I forgot about fucking Smoke and Aces. Who was he in Dick? Yeah, I don't, this is not a Chip.
No, I feel like he's
this was
been...
not a, this is a very, like, lackluster.
Van Wilder.
Fiesta. Yeah.
I mean, that was 2002, but still.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I feel like he was a big enough name then, and there were enough things to marathon. None of them though evoke the word fiesta still.
No. And that's not anything that's going to entice me to any sort of function, but I feel bad for Tim. I feel like, of course, this is them trying to lament on like, oh, sometimes you're just right for, like, you have your person, and when you try to deny it, you can hurt other people in the process. And I get what they are trying to say. I don't give a fuck. It's still not good.
No,
I still feel
it's...
bad for Tim. I still feel like Margot has sunk to a new low. And he really is perfect for Dylan now. He can't claim he's better than Dylan. He's done the same shit in a different font that Dylan did.
Right, because, like, obviously this wasn't
cheating. No, it wasn't
but
cheating.
It was this weird, like, infidelity dance thing that Tim did not
consent
do anything to, like, get sucked into. He did not deserve that. Hashtag justice for Tim.
Justice for Tim. Like, I really feel like he deserved to be at least, like, okay, because at least Marco and they had their issues. At least there was some romance, if you can call it that, attached. And it's not like he suffered and didn't get romance. Tim is just out here suffering, don't give shit.
Yeah, no, it's yeah.
He got inconvenienced. That's what Tim got out of this whole thing. Inconvenience.
Like, and kicked out of his house.
And kicked out of his fucking house. That is more than inconvenience.
Disinherited.
A just fucking scratched out of that motherfucking will. Yeah, I'm very, very upset. The only thing I have of note, other than, like, talking about Dylan and Marco, is Ellie when they're like, oh yeah, we're gonna go to this gay club so we won't have to be hit on, and Ellie's like, oh great, like she's like, that would be the last thing I want to have happen right now, being hit on by a guy who's not one of the three guys that I've known since grade 9. That would be fucking awesome. Can I have some of that, please?
Pretty please.
Well, then be careful what you wish for, honey, because then Jesse's going to be sent your way. And you could have just returned that to sender. You should just return them. Like, I will not sign for this package. Sorry.
Let me check my notes, but I think I'm good to go to the corner.
Yeah, because fuck this fucking
animal. I can't remember if I said this when we talked about Mr. Ellis and the B-plot, mm-hmm. or if I just thought about the fact that I wanted to say it. So listeners and Avis, I'm sorry if I'm saying this twice, mm-hmm. but Mr. Ellis, like, all of his lines are super hard-ass, but he's mm-hmm. got, like, the kindest face and this dorky little lisp.
Yeah, he does.
It's very weird. I wish we got more of him.
Like, I want more. I'm addicted.
And also, movie night at Paige's house is not a first date. Like, I would be... Have some goddamn self-respect, Tim.
Have some like, goddamn not to self-respect.
Victim blame, but God.
Tim doesn't have self-respect. He doesn't know her. He does not fucking
Hopefully
know her.
Hopefully he learned from this.
Right. Learn from this! When you lay down at night and you lay down in your bed and you take responsibility for yourself. I'm quoting America's Next Top Model. It's time to be done. No. The one note that I didn't say anything about that I am really mad at myself for feeling this way, but I know that this is true. Marco and Tim would, on paper, be a good couple because they do have some things in common. They do have some rapport, but they have no chemistry.
No chemistry.
They are like the like visual equivalent of watching paint dry. It's not. It's,
I don't. Yeah. No. I don't like it.
And unfortunately, Dylan and Marco like sparkle on screen or something. Like their chemistry when they're talking about nothing is amazing. Their chemistry when they're being all intense is amazing. Their chemistry when they're being assholes to each other is amazing. And if only I desire so fucking much for them not to be written so foully so that I could actually enjoy some of this representation that you speak of. But right. instead, we are here. So I do not digress.
And on that note, down to the corner.
Yeah, I had just a brief little couple. Few people.
Yeah, I didn't have a lot. I took a picture of the four of them studying in the first scene. Mm-hmm. Paige has that poncho on.
The fucking poncho.
It's fine.
It's one of her better ponchos, but
it's one of her better ponchos. It was a poncho time.
It was. The ponchos were like the new like hoodies for a while because you could just throw your poncho on.
Mm-hmm.
You had something underneath it.
And it was like, unless it was like a drug rug, it was like dressier than mm-hmm. a hoodie.
Looked like you put forth effort. You didn't.
Right.
You didn't. You just grabbed that poncho off your desk chair and rolled out, bitch. I usually wore like the same 3 elbow length shirts. I love my 3-quarter sleeves, man. I love my 3-quarter sleeves in high school and middle school with those ponchos. But that's a good, I mean, there's a lot of outfit repeating in this episode.
There's a lot of outfit repeating. You've got Marco in another fucking beanie. I mean, it's fine. It's not his worst outfits.
No. This outfit wise, there's a lot of midness going on. It's very mid a lot of this episode. Another outfit repeat on, I think, both Ellie and Marco when they're walking down the street and they get this like shot of this person's car with their entire license plate just in the frame. But it's like that track jacket that Marco's wearing, and Ellie's wearing those like really heavily cuffed pants with the pointy boots and leather jacket and studded belt.
I got a picture of Hazel when Mr. Ellis is handing out the exams.
Mm-hmm.
And she's looking fucking cute. She's wearing like a light green cami with like a maybe slightly darker green jacket over it and some jeans. Her hair looks good. There is another black female student like in front of Ellie. So it's Hazel, then Ellie, then this background character who's also in green.
Okay.
And also with relaxed hair. And so I'm kind of like, is this like their backup Hazel? And they just accidentally got both of them in the shot because, although she's wearing glasses, but you know, Hazel could be wearing glasses today if we need her to.
They could. She could be because she's whatever they want her to be that day.
She's such a fucking afterthought this season in particular. I hate justice for Hazel.
I hate it here. I hate it here. I have Mrs. Van Zant. When her I guess they're leaving. I think this is right before they leave for their play or whatever. And she is in like some tan pleather pants. And it's not exactly the same pleather material, but it is still swishy. She's got on like a corresponding slightly less tan wingtip jacket and no shirt underneath.
Okay, Miss Van Zant.
Just plunging V with the collar popped open and her little bag. And, you know, she's got a cute little fine apple on her head. She's going to the theater, honey.
I have Marco looking very, very like busy in. They're in the cafeteria. He's wearing a white shirt with black stripes, but then like one of the like bars of white has writing and some like splotchy art on it. And then he's wearing this hat with a red outline star that seems to be filled in with camo. And then it's like not fully fitting inside of like a pink oval that is not actually fully an oval. There's a lot going on. None of it is good.
That's a lot of detail for an outfit that sounds so disappointing. In that same scene, I have Liberty. It's a very basic ass outfit, but it's one of the better ones of her this season. Obviously, she is just wearing like a button up, like it's like a pink pinstriped blouse and like a white cami underneath, flare jeans.
I love Liberty in pinks and purples and like maroon.
It fits her undertone.
Like, yeah, no,
the undertones of love her face. It. Yeah, she's serving. I think she's still got those Nerdburger ass shoes on, those Skechers. Her and Emma share shoes. This is canon because they both have these.
Which is weird because they're not fucking friends right now.
They're not fucking friends, but. And then, of course, I love the curly, you know, pony with the tendrils in her face. I think it's a really cute look for her. And thank God they just stopped dressing her like they did when she was pregnant because that was so terrible.
Yeah. I'm glad that we've moved on from that.
Mm-hmm.
I have everybody waiting in line at the club. Hazel looks fucking cute. She's got like a blue tank top on with like, looks like some bedazzling at the bosom, but I can't quite tell. Mm-hmm. Paige is wearing a blazer.
Mm-hmm.
And like a very big, like, it looks like big brown wooden beads necklace.
Yeah.
And then Marco is wearing a sweater and a button down. And it's, I think Hazel looks really cute. I think everybody else does not look like they're going to the club.
Like, did you even try? I just have one more, and it's that egregious ass, yellow, stiff ass motherfucking windbreaker that Dylan decides to show up in. This yellow ass motherfucking thing. This thing is so fucking yellow. If you threw it up in the air.
Right. It looks like he borrowed it from Ellie.
Now all he needs is a running eyeliner. It's so fucking yellow and it's so stiff. And he's so tall that like it like doesn't, I don't know. It fits him just like it's like draped over him. It doesn't fit him right. I don't know what he has on underneath to make it fit like that. Like all baggy, but also like tight, but also loose, but also tent-like.
Yeah.
It's not. And then he's all got his head down. He's like, I'm not gonna hurt you again. I'm not an idiot. I'm gonna smack that yellow ass coat off of you, Dylan. Fuck this yellow coat. I don't know the rage, but I'm gonna stick.
I didn't like it either, but I definitely did not feel quite as strongly.
As spirited.
Don't wear a yellow windbreaker in front of Avis. Don't wear any yellow windbreaker in front of Avis. It's not worth the risk.
It's like, listen. I go on a case-by-case basis, but fuck that one in particular. Jeez-ah.
He looks like a douchey lifeguard in like an 80s movie.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. On that note, before we head to the shots fired, we have two people who have fallen into the black hole this week.
Really?
Yeah, this is the last that we will see of Tim.
Oh, fuck.
And Mr. Ellis is also gone for good.
No,
we hardly knew ye, Mr. Ellis.
Knew ye. We really didn't. You just cursed out Emma that one time. And
I liked you that.
That was awesome.
You could have done better by Liberty this week, though.
Yeah, she could have used some support.
But, you know.
Pour one out for our homies. Okay.
Here we are. I don't know that I would call either of them my homie, but I'm sure.
Probably not a homie.
Yeah, no,
but
no, pour one out.
Homie-like person. Acquaintance, maybe. I don't know.
All right. You want to fire the first shot?
Pew, 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 pew.
Shots fired.
Ashoa, let me just flip to that.
No, you have to just have it ready right now.
Pull it out of my asshole. Okay, my first one is Marco saying, how is the Satan child anyway?
My first one is Ellie saying, question, who's still bitter over last year? Answer, oh. Marco Del Rossi.
Mm-hmm. I have Liberty saying, because if you fail, Dad will send you to summer school again.
I have Liberty saying, I don't care if you were adopted, dropped by a stork, or abducted by aliens. Get out.
Oh, okay. I have a couple before that. See ya.
Okay, go ahead.
I have Danny saying, somebody's a bigger nerd than you. Paige saying, all I'm saying, if you're so ready to move on, then why aren't you doing it? And Liberty saying, more important than Mr. Ellis's chem exam? Yeah, I doubt that.
I have Ellie telling Marco, because he's checking his email on his phone, okay, that thing is one step away from you becoming an android. Because this was back when, like, we didn't even have smartphones. Like, we had, like, smart dumb phones.
My next one is Marco saying, don't call me, don't text me, don't email me, don't even think about me. Leave me alone.
Mine comes right before that of, we are through, over, so don't send me stupid little emails.
I have Liberty in response to JT saying, like, how did you finish that fast? Or whatever, like, whatever. And she's like, maybe because I never started.
I have Dylan saying, come on, Marco, who are you kidding? You're always playing it safe. You're way too chicken to gamble.
I have Danny right before that saying, I appreciate you being the demon seed and taking the heat off of me, but I have a reputation to uphold.
I have, oh, we didn't even touch on that yet. Danny's plan was to watch porn with his friend.
You watch porn with your friends?
I have, and you mentioned it earlier, but I have Liberty firing a shot at her parents in the form of, here's to dressing me in overalls till ninth grade.
Right after that, because she's like, I think that you think, and I think that you think, Danny says, attention, software glitch.
Yep. And then after she breaks the mirror, Danny's like, Liberty, it's a mirror. Your face didn't break it this time. So why so upset?
Mm-hmm.
Like, your sister is clearly in the midst of a mentee bee, her first real mentee bee. And you're like, haha, you're ugly.
No, actually.
You get it, Liberty? I called you ugly.
That's the joke, because you're so fucking ugly. Your face
get
is
it?
Ugly.
Get it? Yeah, because your face breaks mirrors because you're ugly. Fuck you, Danny Van Sant.
No, actually, though. I have Marco saying, that's what being reckless is all about, my friend. Just doing, not thinking, hurting whoever you want in the process.
Yep. And then I have, go back to your stupid, lying, cheating ex. Because you know what, Marco? You are perfect for him.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and I don't think I... This was before she broke, no, in response to her breaking the mirror. But it is a stop. It's a self-inflicted, and it's kind of mean.
That's why.
Her saying, I'm stupid, useless, messed up.
Poor Lib. She's going through it so hard. I'm sure that we'll explore that trauma more in season 6.
Right. And yeah, I think we're going to get a little bit more time to talk to her about what's really going on, you know?
Yeah. See how she feels.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, is that it for shots fired?
Yeah, I'm fucking done.
Okay. Coming hot. Okay, so you want to start with the bummers or the shining stars?
Well, let's just get the bummers.
Okay.
On bumming.
Danny.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
Dylan. Marco.
Honestly, Ellie, for not, like,
for being there.
To, like, not do that shit. And
for Liberty's parents.
Liberty's parents.
Okay, so who shines?
Fucking Derek, unfortunately.
Yeah, Derek really is like the MVP of this episode.
Which
I'm
is
gonna give
bars and fucking
honorable mention to Tim for having a backbone finally.
Yeah.
It takes him like 90% of the episode
right,
to grow
that
he's
backbone, in. He's...
But he does.
Oh gosh. No, yeah.
What's
yeah.
that vine where that like old naked guy is like dancing in the city surrounded by cardboard signs? He's like, respect yourself, love yourself.
Oh my
no.
gosh, no.
Don't know that one.
Same as born in the house and I'm in the house bored. See, I don't know. No, I have no idea what you're talking about.
that's what Tim needs to do, is he needs to respect himself and love himself.
He does, but you know.
Look, sometimes you can only hear it from a naked hippie in New York City.
I don't know what Tim needs, but I don't know that it's that. You know?
Does anyone else shine? Anyone at all?
No. I mean, Liberty... Liberty, because she has she beats herself up and then she still pulls herself up and does something that she is going to make her feel somewhat better about the situation she's in. So, yeah, I'll give Liberty.
I'll give it to Liberty. Does it go there?
Does it go there?
I feel like the B-plot goes there.
The B-plot goes there.
The I feel like the wishes. A-plot might go there if it wasn't just the same tired Dylan and Marco shit.
Mm-hmm. It feels like This is like their saga part 25, and we're supposed to give a fuck.
I'm over it.
Yeah. I'm unsubscribing from this drama.
If only we had that option.
We did this to ourselves. But
we
no,
did.
Just this one episode. I'm excited to continue forth.
Me too. Thanks for listening to your mom's podcast. Next week, we will be joined by Titty Snake producer Brandy to discuss the season 5 finale, High Fidelity, which is highly focused on Darcy for some reason. This episode of Your Mom's Podcast was made possible in part by McGill University, bad parenting, and support from listeners like you.
Woo!
We would like to take a moment to thank our Patreon subscribers. Tay,
Evie,
Miranda,
and an extra special thank you to our Titty Snake producers, Alika,
Brandy,
Chelsea,
Corey,
and Tawny.
Thank you guys. Love you.
If you'd like to further support our show, you can find us on TikTok and Facebook as Your Mom's Podcast. We also have a Facebook group of the same name. And you can find us on Instagram at YMPadcast. Your Mom's Podcast is available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscriptions and reviews are another great free way to support us. However, if you're interested in supporting us in not free ways, we have a lot of great bonus content on our Patreon, and some great merch at our shop, which can be found at your-moms-podcast-shop.forthwall.com. And remember, that's Padcast. P-A-H-D-C-A-S-T. Thank you.